Oh, you have your mouth full, don't you?
Advertisements.
Today's episode of The Longest Shortest Time is sponsored by Hooked on Phonics. For over 30 years, more than 5 million kids have learned to read using Hooked on Phonics, and now they are proud to introduce their exciting new digital reading program. With over 200 songs, games, and ebooks they can read on their own, kids will be excited to use the Hooked on Phonics app day after day. Download the Hooked on Phonics app free from iTunes, Google Play, or Amazon today, or go to hookedonphonics.com/longest for an exclusive offer. Today's episode is also sponsored by Havenly. Having a beautifully designed home can seem like a fantasy for those of us with families. With Havenly, creating a gorgeous home can be easy, fun, and affordable. Starting at $79, a Havenly online interior designer will walk you through an easy 4-step design process. When you're done, you'll have the dream space that your family deserves. Get started now by taking a free style quiz at havenly.com and use code LONGSHORT at checkout to get 20% off the paid design fee. Thanks also to this season's presenting sponsor, Horizon Organic. This is The Longest Shortest Time. I'm Hillary Frank, and I'm here in the studio with my producer, Abigail Keel. Hi, Abigail.
Hello.
So, Abigail, we just came off of a two-parter on placenta encapsulation. That's where people turn their placentas into little pills and swallow them down in the hope that they will prevent themselves from getting postpartum depression.
That's right.
So those stories were really fun to make. They took a lot of work.
So, yeah, we had trips to New Jersey. We had calls across the country.
Yeah, but lots of research on
That's right.
placenta. Lots of images on the internet we can't unsee. So we have a lot of exciting episodes coming up too, right?
That's right. We've been working on collecting sex questions for another episode of The Parent's Guide to Doing It with the amazing Esther Perel.
That's right. So she wrote Mating in Captivity. Mm-hmm. She's like one of the most famous, maybe the most famous sex therapist.
Yeah. She's hip.
Yeah. And how can people, we're still collecting questions for that, right? How can people
sure.
send those in if they want to?
Yeah, they can always email them to hello@longestshortesttime.com and okay. we'll follow up.
Okay. And so we've got that coming. What else?
Very soon, we're going to hear from Anna Sale, who just had her first child.
And Anna hosts the wonderful Death, Sex, and Money podcast.
Right. And then we also have an exciting appearance later in the season from a child chef.
That's right. Oh, I can't wait for the child chef.
Among many other things.
So these episodes, they take a lot of work. We love doing it, but it's also like a lot of work equals stress.
Yeah.
Yes. It's unavoidable. And, you know, I've been thinking about it. And when I was like stressed out in middle school, I would just tune into my Walkman and put on a really good cassette. And the one that I turn to over and over again that really stands out for me is Richard Marx's Repeat Offender.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the lyrics just felt so true. Okay, so Right Here Waiting is one that I would rewind. I would just hit rewind over and over again. But I really just remember being like, oh, yeah, yep, right here waiting for you. And I think, like, I don't even know if I was, like, thinking about a crush or something. I was, like, you know, 12 years old or something. And
right.
So we're going to give everyone, like, a chill pill in the form of a Richard Marx interview.
Ooh.
This interview comes from Howl, which okay. is the premium service from Earwolf, which is, that's our network. And the show is called Father Time. And it's hosted by Jamie Kaler, who's an actor from Friends and How I Met Your Mother. And kind of up until now, Jamie Kaler has lived, like, the bachelor lifestyle.
Right.
He turned 50 recently, and now he has 2 kids under the age of 2.
Whoa.
So he has been wanting to talk to people about fatherhood. And so that's what his show is about. He interviews dads.
Right.
And the dad in this interview that we're going to play for you is, of course, Richard Marx.
And tell me, what did you learn about Richard in this interview that you didn't know about him before?
I learned that he was like a dream son.
Oh.
Like, he would have been such a good son to have. I see things from the motherhood perspective now. He was very self-motivated, very close to his father. And in fact, his dad is responsible for a lot of the music that I had stuck in my head as a kid as well. I'm gonna just leave that as a tease.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
For people to find out. And so in this interview, Richard Marx came in and he also brought his son Luke, who's in his 20s.
All right. Well, let's give the people what they want.
Yeah. Let's play this episode of Father Time. And we'll be back next week with a bunch of new episodes, starting with Anna Sale.
That's right. And you guys will be right here waiting.
Nicely played.
Thank you.
Welcome to another edition of Father Time. And my guest today is, he's one of my favorites. I Googled you.
You did not.
Of course I did. Are you kidding me?
And you were like, whoa, he did that? I thought that was Bryan Adams.
You and he, I want to see a celebrity death match between the two of you, if you can only be so lucky. Your career is ridiculous. You started as a backup singer for people like Lionel Richie, Whitney Houston, Julio Iglesias. Then you were like, wait, I can write songs. And so you started writing songs for Kenny Rogers and then later on for NSYNC, Luther Vandross, and you won a Grammy for that one. And then you were like, you know what? I not only can write songs, but I can sing them and shoot to number one with hits like Don't Mean Nothing, Should've Known Better, Endless Summer Nights, Right Here Waiting, which has been, I mean, I shot you a text from the store when I was listening to it just recently when I was dancing and the guy was like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. My guest today is Mr. Richard Marx and his son Luke is here today. Yay! It's going to be one of my favorite shows because, you know, rock star slash dad is an odd combination.
Well, let's
not to have children, but to actually raise them to be nice young people.
Oh, well, that's sometimes. Very nice of you. He is an incredibly nice guy, but I got to tell you, let's just cut right to a segue because you unknowingly introed it. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Lucas and I were running around and we stopped at the grocery store, which is where you heard my song and you texted me from there. Mm-hmm. I'm huge in grocery stores.
Yeah, they love you there.
Blowing up in grocery stores.
Yeah, I'm blowing up in grocery stores.
CVS.
Yeah, CVS. I'm huge in CVS and Rite Aid. So we're in the grocery store looking for something, and Luke goes, Dad. And he points up, and they were playing Should've Known Better or something on the on the system. And I went, oh, and Luke went, we must be in the 80s aisle.
You dick.
Yeah, what a dick.
What a dick.
I said, hey, remember when you were in my will? Yeah, not so much anymore.
Yeah, and remember that beautiful home you grew up in and the food and the schools you went to? You know what paid for that? That song.
Yeah.
Dude, it's amazing. I mean, your body of work's ridiculous. And your new album, which we'll get into detail later, is Beautiful Goodbye, which is amazing, and now on iTunes, and you're touring it. You just keep recording. You just can't sit still and enjoy the money and the fame. You just need more.
No, I mean, I love what I do. And the idea of not – I'm going to write songs anyway. It's like flossing, you know?
It's like it's so easy for you.
No, it's just something I do all, you know, every day. It's like I can't remember a 24-hour period where I didn't write some piece of music. So that's going to happen anyway.
Well, let's talk about your childhood because your dad is a famous jingle writer.
Yeah.
So you kind of grew up in a musical household where your dad was writing such, I mean.
Two scoops of raisins in a package of Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
That's your dad.
My dad wrote that, yeah.
There's hundreds of them.
Ask any mermaid you happen to see, what's the best tuna chicken of the sea? You don't remember that,
Of
right?
course
oh,
I
you
do.
You do, okay.
Oh, dude, I'm ancient. That's why this show is called Father Time.
Okay.
I'm old. Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, he wrote like hundreds of those catchy 30-second hits. So yes, I grew up watching my father, who was not a rock star, but he was a professional musician, balance his passion for what he did because he loved making music and raising me.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
No.
Only child. Mm-hmm. Chicago. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your dad. What was it like growing up with a, did he go to the office every day to write music or was he writing it at home?
He wrote at home at night for the, you know, he would prepare the next day's work. He spent the day at the office or the studio every day. But he would be the first to say that his priority was music.
Yeah.
That his family, he loved us. He was a great dad. He was a really good husband. But we were his mistresses, essentially, you know. Mm. And I understand this because before I was a husband or a father, I was a musician. It's really what I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I guess in the back of my mind when I was even a teenager, I thought, you know, of course you want to, you know, fall in love and have a family. But that wasn't the focus. The focus was I want to conquer. I want to take the music business by storm and I want to be a professional songwriter. And so I understood that actually even as a teenager with my dad, that I didn't feel slighted really. You know, it was like that's what he loves. His main focus is his work and his music.
Did he want to be a rock star and play in bands? He literally was just a musician who was like, I'm going to write jingles. Seems like an
odd job. Well, no, I mean, it's actually, this is one of my favorite things he ever imparted to me, which is, I think, an incredible concept. He started out as he was a child prodigy pianist, a classical pianist. Mm-hmm. He conducted his first orchestra at 12. At 12 years old, he got up in front of an orchestra and conducted. And then he moved to jazz, and he became a really popular jazz pianist in Chicago. So he played the top clubs. He was the house pianist at a place called Mr. Kelly's, which was really famous in Chicago. He would play for the comedians and artists that would come into town. He played with Lenny Bruce. He played piano while Lenny Bruce was doing his shtick, many times. So he had a really interesting career as a pianist and as a jazz guy. Made a few albums. And then in the early 60s, right around when I was born, I was born in 63, he started his own jingle company. He worked for a year or two with one of the first jingle companies out of Chicago and just was basically doing all the work. So he started his own company. And then for 20-something years, he dominated that industry. So years later in the 80s, when I was starting my career, I remember we were having dinner one night and my dad said, you know, you got to remember something, Richard. The thing that I did that was my success, the thing that was my thing that I conquered when I was your age didn't exist. The jingle business didn't exist.
Right.
So that concept, I tell my kids that and I tell young people that, you know, the thing that you might end up being the most successful at might not even exist right now.
Yeah. Well, was your mom just a stay-at-home mom?
No, my mom was a singer. She sang with big bands for a couple of years, and then she met my dad. They had me, and then my dad's jingle business was booming, and she's still around. She's 80. She still can sing, actually, still. She sang on all those commercials. So she sang on all the Kellogg's and Oldsmobile. She sang on
That's
almost
crazy.
Every commercial he did, yeah.
Did you learn instruments as early as you, I mean, did he always sit you at the piano and just like teach you?
Yeah, he made me take piano lessons. They made me take piano lessons when I was 5 or 6. Mm. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And after like 6 months, they said, you know, he's miserable. So they let me quit. And then a couple of years later, I wanted to take guitar lessons.
Yeah.
So I started taking guitar lessons. And then 4 or 5 years after that, I got really into, you know, Elton John and Billy Joel and piano players. But I didn't want to admit to my parents that they had been right. So I'd come home from school and I'd be in the basement on the piano, like learning stuff. And I remembered enough from when I was a little kid.
Right.
So I'm teaching myself. I'm teaching myself based upon records on the radio. And it was like a year. I'd been playing the piano again for like a year. My parents didn't know. And then one day my dad came home early from work and he's like, is that you? Are you playing the piano? It's like, yeah, whatever. He said, well, let me show you. You're playing this chord wrong.
He must have been incredibly proud of you to then all of a sudden you start to catapult and start writing songs and going off. So
you know, you either have an innate singing ability, and all three of my sons do.
Yeah.
And I just started singing around the house to Beatles records and Monkees records. And so when I was like 5 or 6, my dad, you know, the jingle business was booming for him. And he would, every once in a while, he'd get, he'd have to do a job for a kid-oriented thing, a breakfast cereal or a candy bar, or, you know. And so one day, one of his associates said, why don't you just have Richard sing one of this? And my dad, I think, he was a little afraid of nepotism or,
sure.
But he was like, all right, we'll try it. So I go in and I just nailed it. It was like, I had so much fun and I did it in one take. You know, they taught me the, if you believe in peanut butter, clap your hands. Easy, right? From that point on, so I did probably 100 jingles from the time I was 6 or 5 to right into my, you know, teen years. And then even a little bit after I moved away, when I moved to LA, and I was doing background vocals, if my dad would say, hey, I've got a Double Mint commercial you could do, that's cash.
That's
it
cash,
like really
yeah.
good money. So he would still, you know, use me on jingles.
How did the Double Mint one go? That's the one with the twins. They had the two
yeah.
twins in the ad.
I'll remember it. A double pleasure's waiting for you. A double pleasure from Double Mint gum.
That's crazy.
Really catchy melodies, though.
Yeah.
My dad didn't write any of the stupid slogans, any of the lyrics. He just wrote the melodies, the catchy tunes.
And then would he still go play some jazz club on a Friday, Saturday night?
No, hardly ever. Hardly
ever. He let it all go.
I mean, he could still play. He was a badass right to the day he died.
Right.
But one time there was a jazz singer in the late 80s who came to him and begged him to come and play for her at Michael's Pub in New York, which is a pretty, you know,
yeah.
big deal. And he went and did a week with her, and he had a great time.
Yeah.
But you know what? He kind of conquered everything he wanted to do. He achieved everything he wanted to do. And he never had eyes to be a star, or he never wrote songs. He wrote commercials.
Never wrote songs?
No.
Did he ever play on stage with you? Did you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He.
That must have been amazing.
Yeah. I did a tour in the mid-90s, and the band and I played with Atlanta Symphony, somewhere in the Boston Philharmonic, and Chicago Symphony. And so I asked my dad to write orchestral arrangements to my whole set. You know, it was rock. You know,
you were a rock star by then.
Well, I mean, yeah. the music yeah. was very rock at the time.
It
was like, you know, because I started at rock radio. And so the set was full of rock songs, but he wrote these really cool arrangements. And so he came out on the road with me and conducted the orchestra. And every time I would introduce him, because he was a very striking looking guy. He was tall and very heavy. He fought his weight. He was big. I mean, it's hard to imagine me with a dad that was obese, but he was huge. He was big, like 250 yeah. pounds. But he had thick white curly hair and a white beard. And he was really into it. When he would conduct, he wouldn't just stand there and wave his arms. He was really into it and he loved it. And so he was fun to watch on stage. And so when I would introduce the band, and then I introduced the orchestra, and I'm conducting my father, Dick Marks, and the audience would go nuts. And the first night I did that, completely without, you know, rehearsing it in my head, I said, you know, I never really told anybody this, but I said, you know, from the time I was a little kid, I made the decision that I would be Richard. Because my dad, Dick Marks, was very famous in Chicago, where I'm from. And I thought, if I'm not Richard, he will forever be known as Big Dick, and we know what that would make me.
Yeah.
So I went with Richard.
Coming up, a young Richard Marx asks Kenny Rogers for help, gets way more than he wanted. And Luke Marx talks about growing up with a rock star dad. More Father Time after this. Stay with us.
Can you say advertisements?
Advertisements.
So Abigail, do you ever have trouble finding a bra that fits?
Yeah, ever since I first started looking for a bra.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of us can have issues with like spillage and gaping and slipping straps, all those things that make your bra like not fit you right. But here's the thing. Third Love's 24/7 t-shirt bra gets rid of all those issues.
Can it even like eliminate that thing where you have like cup spillage and cup gaping all at the same time?
All at the same time. Yes, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And it takes care of that for me. And Third Love has online fit specialists that'll help you find your perfect fit right from your home.
Oh, that's so nice. You can avoid the encounters with like the ladies and the measuring tape. Then you're like topless. Yeah.
Exactly. Third Love stands behind this product so much that they are willing to let our listeners try the t-shirt bra for free. Just pay for shipping, wear it for 30 days. You can even take off the tags and wash it and really try this bra out. If you love it, you keep it and they'll charge your card. If you don't love it, just send it on back for free and your card will not be charged. Go to thirdlove.com/time to get started. That's thirdlove.com/time. So Abigail, I consider myself a constant learner, which is why I love having unlimited access to the Great Courses Plus, which is an on-demand video learning service.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, so the Great Courses Plus has thousands of short, engaging video lectures presented by award-winning experts. And they do these videos on just so many different topics. So you can learn about whatever interests you, like history or psychology or yoga or cooking. And right now they have this really awesome course on the fundamentals of photography.
Oh, you know, I took a class in college, and so I learned words like aperture and ISO and all these like technique things, but I don't think I could tell you today what any of those are for.
Well, you can learn all of those terms from an actual National Geographic photographer.
Cool. I could learn to take great pictures for the show.
Yes. And right now, because you listen to The Longest Shortest Time, you will immediately get a free month of unlimited access to all of the Great Courses Plus lectures when you sign up. Start your free month today by going to thegreatcoursesplus.com/longshort. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/longshort. We're back, and today I'm playing an episode of Father Time with Jamie Kaler. Let's get back to his interview with Richard Marx and his 23-year-old son, Luke.
Feels like you had kind of an idyllic childhood.
I did. I really did. I mean,
it's honestly no tragedy, no drama.
No,
just like,
I didn't
we all love each other and we're all doing great.
Yeah. I mean, I really didn't have anything until my dad died, which was, you know, it was tragic and sudden. It was a result of a car accident. So it was, that messed me up bad, you know, because he and I were like really, really, really close. But he was in his, he was 73.
Right.
He was still really, you know, young.
In a car accident.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sucked. Yeah. Big time. But up until that moment, up until that event, my whole life was pretty much charmed, you know?
Yeah.
But I was always looking over my shoulder. I knew even when I was really young that this isn't how most people get to go through life.
Yeah.
And so I was grateful. But I was always looking over my shoulder for what, when something bad was going to happen. There was a little bit of that, you know. Do you think about that? Does that register with you?
I used to a lot more than it does right now. I mean, I think it's just because I see you all the time. I don't think about it, but I used to.
When you were here and he was in Chicago, or the opposite?
Well, when I was in Chicago and you were here, even before that, when I was a kid, when I was 8, 9, 10, probably till I was like 14, one of my biggest fears was losing my parents. It would keep me up at night.
Yeah,
I think that's everybody's fear at that point. I mean, when you're little, sometimes you're like, man, if I can only get rid of them. Man, the things I could accomplish if they would just let me stay up to watch Hawaii 5-0. I could really get some shit.
You know
shit,
what I'm saying? As opposed
to. And then you get to a certain age, you know, it's like, I mean, the kids, we'll talk about that too, because when they're little, they're so, like, I have two little babies and they're sweet, they're horrible, whatever, but they're always, ah, daddy, I love you. I'm waiting for the 14-year-old to tell me to go fuck myself.
Yeah.
And then the 25-year-old to come home and go, Dad, I was sorry. I'm sorry.
You're going to have conflict. Mm-hmm. You're definitely going to have conflict. But that doesn't mean that you're going to have one of your kids tell you to go fuck yourself. It might happen, but.
Well, you had three boys.
Yeah.
Three
and
boys.
None of them have ever told me to go fuck myself.
Well, not to your face.
Go fuck yourself.
Not to your face.
Well, just now. It's the first time to my
honestly,
face.
Honestly, well, it happens sometimes. So let's talk about that then. So you left right after high school and said, I'm going to LA.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm going to be a rock star.
Well, I was going to go to college. I was planning to go to Northwestern and study music, you know, which would have been such a jerk off.
Well, you just would have wasted 2 years before you decided to go to LA.
But I
with some debt.
I was in my senior year of high school, and I had recorded a few songs, my first songs, and you know, it was a fluke. A guy who knew a guy who knew Lionel Richie. And Lionel Richie heard I couldn't believe he listened to the, it was a cassette tape. My phone number was written on the back, and he called me and said,
Hello. Come on. How could I not take that?
You had to.
Is it you I'm looking for? I'm sorry. I'm singing. That's terrible. I sound terrible.
You can imagine. This is like when he, it was maybe he and Michael Jackson were
the biggest people on earth.
On earth. And yeah. he said, Richie's still the bomb. Yeah, he's a great guy. I heard these songs and man, you know, I really like your voice. And you, what are you doing? You should move to LA because you're not going to do anything there. And I looked at my parents and I was like, Lionel Richie says I should come to LA and blow off college. And they went, go.
See you. Yeah.
They were like, go for it.
That's awesome too, as a parent to go like, yeah, yeah. Even though you're 18 years old, but obviously you were, you know,
I was pretty
established and you seem like a pretty-
I was pretty focused.
You were pretty focused.
They weren't worried about me.
Me senior year in high school would have been a disaster. I'm going off to Barbados. Where are you going? I don't know. This dude called, he said there's a bartending job. You're 18. I don't know. So off you went, yeah. Lionel Richie, and you ended up,
I sang on his first solo record and then he recommended me as a background singer to a couple other people. So I ended up singing background on, like you mentioned, Julio Iglesias, which was awesome, Madonna, Whitney Houston. And then I was singing, Lionel, you know, and Kenny Rogers have a history. Lionel wrote Lady. That was like Kenny's biggest hit.
Yeah.
And so Lionel said, you should hire this kid from Chicago that I've been working with to sing on your new record. So Kenny's people hired me for 2 days. And it was like, I was singing on like 3 or 4 different songs on this album. So I went in, did the session, and I overheard Kenny saying to his producer, you know, we still need that ballad. We still need that song and he described the song that they needed. And I had a session the next day. So I went home and I wrote this song. I came in the next day and I did exactly what you should never do as a background singer. Do you want to get fired? Looking back, it was so fucking stupid. But I'm on the session and I remember thinking, I can't do this. I'm going to get, this is so, I was shaking. I was so scared. But I was like, I got to fucking do this.
Hey,
so we took
Kenny?
A break. no, I called him Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers? That's so funny.
Do you have a minute?
Yeah. I said, Mr. Rogers, funny thing.
Yeah.
You're gonna crack up. I'm a songwriter as well.
And he listened to it.
He said, well, okay, let's hear your song. So we went to the piano next door and I sat at the piano. I played in this song called Crazy.
I played it live. I didn't know that.
I didn't have a demo of it. Yeah. I was living in my shitty apartment.
That must have been nerve-wracking.
Oh my God.
Like to go, hey.
So he's like, you know, I like this song. This is good. How about at the end if you add this word here? And I went, yeah, okay. He goes, great, we're co-writers.
That's awesome.
And it says it's now in that song
written
by Kenny Rogers and Richard Marx. And I for a second I got pissed off and I was like, hey, 100% of nothing is nothing.
Yeah.
So and the song went to number one. It was a number one country song called Crazy. And he, to this day, we joke about it. He looks at me, he goes, you know I didn't write any of that song, but I still get half the money.
He gets checks every day for that stupid thing. That's awesome, which I'm sure you ended up.
I bought my first car with it.
Yeah.
How
soon after did you get married and have kids?
It's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah, get into that.
So I think it was, like a year or so after I moved to LA and started working as a background singer. One of the jobs I got hired to do was on a movie soundtrack for the sequel to Staying Alive, Saturday Night Fever, mm-hmm. which was called Staying Alive.
Oh, yeah.
And starring John Travolta and Cynthia Rhodes, mm-hmm. who I met and had a massive crush on. And I sang some background vocals on a song that she and Travolta did. And then I didn't see her for a couple of years. And I ran into her again a couple of years later. It was like a year or two before I got a record deal. And we started dating. And so we were together when I did my first record. And then I did my first tour and then everything blew up. And at that point, we had been together for 3.5 years. And it was kind of like that shit or get off the pot moment in a relationship.
Yeah.
Just, you know, even though Cynthia and I are divorced, you know, I think – nothing
but after 25 years of marriage.
Yeah. And we had a really, really great run together. But I wouldn't hesitate to say that I think that being with her or being married or being in a committed relationship at that time probably saved me a little bit, because I think I could have easily gone off the rails. You know,
it was the 80s.
It was the 80s. It was just debauchery central, you know, and I think that
And you had to make a phone call at the end of the night. Well, let's talk to Lou for a second. It must have been odd as growing up and in this household, and you're like, you were on tour a lot and recording. And
I wouldn't say odd. You know, it was from birth, so we were just sort of used to it. There's something to be said for the fact that we're all three musicians, we're all three singers, we're all three producers.
And that you don't hate me.
We don't, for the most part. No, we don't hate you.
And they came out on the road with me a lot.
A lot.
We started a thing where I would take them one at a time. So right. I'd have one-on-one time with them. Because there's that thing, you'll see.
You're like the perfect father. This is so odd to me.
I kind of am.
You're like a rock star, but there's no like, oh, then I woke up with the hookers and the blow. And I haven't seen my son in 15
right.
years. You're like... It was a day job to you in a weird way.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, it needs to be said that that there was a period like in the late 90s when I put out a record after 10 years. We put out a record that didn't light up the charts.
What? No.
But it was like a 10-year run. I was like, okay, I knew this day would come. You can't, nobody, you know, very few people go on, you know, past that. And so, and the boys were, you know— 7, 5. They were young.
And how, Luke, how old are you now?
23.
You're the youngest.
Middle.
You're the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse's 22 and Brandon's 25. And I started to shift into writing and producing for other artists. I was still touring a little bit and I would put out records sporadically, but most of the time I built a studio at home, and that's when I started producing in sync and getting into the country thing with Keith Urban and all. So when they were growing up,
NSYNC was hanging at their house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you like,
remember when JC went and picked you guys up from camp?
Yeah. There was a line of people.
Talk about going to school. Were the girls in the school like, hey, can we come over to your house?
You know what's funny is when we were going to school, no offense, but it wasn't the kids, it was the parents that knew who he was, and when we started hanging out with people, it was then that they kind of informed the kids that
NSYNC's over
yeah.
Luke's house today.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
Luke's dad yeah. used to be kind of like a big deal. Yeah.
Pretty sure he did a bunch of blow. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Probably.
Your work ethic is above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were raising three boys. Was he a bit of a slave driver about like, hey, get off your ass and get some work done?
Yeah. Yeah,
and did
definitely.
You listen to him?
Not for a while. It took me until 2 years ago to really get on my shit.
Well, it's hard. You grew up an affluent kid in Chicago. Maybe you should have punished him more and lived in a tiny little shithole apartment with him.
Yeah.
And maybe he would have worked harder as opposed to some beautiful mansion.
I did live. Well, it wasn't a shithole.
It wasn't exactly a shithole.
It was the 42nd floor, but it was. I lived in a really tiny apartment for a while.
In Chicago?
Yeah, downtown Chicago.
Paid for myself. You poor kid. You okay? Hold on. Back up.
With a view of Neiman Marcus
did
on Michigan Avenue.
Did you pay for it by yourself?
I did, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Luke, are you okay?
It was rough. I was working two jobs at
the
time.
Oh my God. Where did you work? What did
tell
you?
Him,
oh my
tell
gosh.
Where you work, Luke.
I was a host.
Oh, at a
restaurant.
Oh no. Fuck you. You self-entitled little boy. Do you give kids shit? Like, how are the other two?
Same.
Yeah.
My.
But they're talented. They're talented.
They're
you're
incredibly
like, get off your ass. I've heard them sing.
They're incredibly talented. Lucas has found his drive at the same time he's found his
it's too late.
Sound.
He's 23.
He's fucked.
Welcome to fucking Hollywood. Oh, you're older than 14? Say goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Now, they're all kind of doing, you look, my joke, which is not a joke, is I have three sons and not one goddamn doctor. They all want to be, I want to be a musician like dad. No, you don't. This is not the time to be doing this.
No.
There was no escaping it.
No, there was no
To be fair, your father, Richard, did it perfectly where he got it out of his system and then he found a job within his love where he could stay home. He came home every night, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was home every night.
That's why sometimes as a comic or something, I'm always thinking about maybe Vegas and let the people come to you, you know, where you're just home every night.
Yeah, but you and I both, I think that you and I also have this, we're gypsies, you know?
I do. I like changing jobs. Like, I love the fact that I do this, I go act, I host, I do the road.
Yeah.
Were there any crazy stories, no fights, No one almost died.
There were definitely some fights.
We had dysfunction like everything. Okay. Yeah. Of course.
But it wasn't crippling. It was never crippling. I think probably the worst of the worst fights brought us closer together.
It's pretty idyllic. I mean, not as idyllic as my childhood. My childhood was pretty perfect.
Yeah, you're like a Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah. He also had, you know, his first wife was not my mother, obviously. Man. You know, I mean, in any way, shape, or form. My mom, you know, she kind of dominated my upbringing. My dad did his work, and he was great. He was affectionate, and you know, once every month we'd throw the ball back and forth together, whatever. But
you don't seem that athletic to me.
Hey,
wait, really? What? Back up.
I don't seem that athletic.
No. I mean, I've seen you on stage. You bring it. You're pretty.
But yeah, no. I mean, But my mom kept the family. The lack of dysfunction came from my mom.
Was your mom like that, Luke? Did she say, wait till your father comes home? You'll be punished?
Yeah, or she'd call him on the phone, and it was always a joint decision of who, you know, the punishment. And
he's like, hey, babe, I'm walking on stage.
No, I was going to say.
In Frankfurt
babe,
right
I'm
now.
With three hookers and I'm going blow. I can't deal with this right now.
Here, talk to Melody. Here's Ginger.
He was way more lenient with shit. We'd always go to him for like, you know,
he was cool dad, though.
Yeah, he was cool dad.
So you were like, yeah, that sounds good. And she's like, they can't drive. They're 14. They can't borrow the car. And he's like, no, they'll be fine.
What's weird is there were specific things, though. There were things that you were way harder on, and there were things that mom was way harder on.
Like what?
Oh, man, I don't know if I could give you an example. The more serious stuff, if it was a little more serious, he was way harder on us. But like the lighter stuff, he didn't really give a fuck about.
What's a serious thing that he would be like, seriously, you got to do this?
The most serious thing that ever happened with me was the skateboarding accident.
Oh, yeah.
And I was 13 years old, and I didn't know how to skateboard at all, but I was interested in it. And I took one of my buddy's skateboards, and I wanted to go fast, so I put the skateboard on this half-mile-long hill. It's a bluff that goes down to a beach.
Tell them what you were wearing.
That makes sense.
Flip-flops, shorts, no helmet.
I was wearing anything. A thong bathing suit and some mineral oil. That was pretty much it. Just the two things on my body.
And you know,
road rash.
No,
I did. Jesus. I made it all the way down the hill.
Okay.
And at the bottom of the hill was a building.
Sure.
With a curb. Mm-hmm. So going, you know, 30, 40 miles an hour on a skateboard, I hit a curb and ran straight into a wall. Easily could have died. But I broke my wrist, I broke my ankle, I broke my nose.
And you almost lost an eye.
Yeah, I broke my nose actually because I hit the wall, and I didn't break my nose when I hit the wall. I fell and hit a tree trunk that hit me right on the side of the nose.
You still interested in skateboarding?
Yeah, well, I was after that, but not anymore.
So we get this call, he's 5 minutes away at the Park District. And all we know is that your son has had a skateboarding incident. So we jump in the car and we drive down.
So you were home,
down.
Luckily.
Yeah, we were home. We were right there. We drive down, and as we drive down, we see paramedics. And then we get out, and the first thing we see is three or four paramedics surrounding him, who's on the ground, not moving. There's no movement whatsoever. So there was that second where you go, oh, maybe he's dead. You know, because you don't.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I have that every day.
So once I knew he was fine, I wanted to fucking kill him.
You know what's funny? I remember laying on the ground, and, you know, this is a great example of the more serious stuff, because I knew laying there that mom was going to be really upset, and I knew that at some point he was going to be pissed. And I was so scared of being okay and being able to, like, walk
he's
got again.
Broken bones. He's like, dad's going to be
so pissed.
I knew
he was going to flip.
In a minute, Richard Marks gets his grown son to say the two words every parent dreams of. More father time coming up.
Say advertisement.
Advertisement.
Good job.
Question. Why did the little girl ask for artificial flavors in her snacks? Answer. She didn't. That's why Horizon Organic doesn't put artificial flavors, preservatives, or colors in their foods. Because kids eat food. From organic milk from cows that are raised kindly without the use of growth hormones or antibiotics to super cheesy mac and cheese, Horizon makes food kids love with ingredients that parents love too. And now, Horizon has new convenient snacks just in time for back to school. My kid loves Horizon Organics options, from cheddar sandwich crackers to chocolate milk boxes, honey snack grams to smiling strawberry fruit snacks, and even mozzarella cheese sticks, all of which are great easy options when packing lunches last minute. It makes choosing good food for my family easier. Look for the Horizon red snack boxes in the snack aisle and visit horizondairy.com to see what else Horizon has to offer families. That's horizondairy.com. Horizon, grow the kids. We're back with Father Time with Jamie Kaler. His guest, Richard Marx, released his first album at just 24 years old, which, like, that takes a lot of discipline. Richard Marx told Jamie that sometimes it's hard to not hold his own kids to the same standards that he has for himself.
Yeah, I think maybe my expectations of my sons in certain ways have been somewhere between realistic and unrealistic, as most parents are. And when they do something that is so clearly not thought out and no thought of repercussions, I'm less sympathetic, and I can be pretty brutal with them. And I think that maybe one of my downfalls, objectively, was that I expected a certain level of maturity from them based upon the fact that I was really mature.
Right,
when I was
and
that
that's
age.
Not the way it works.
That's not the way it works.
No.
And they would be looking at me like, I'm not you, you know? And so that was probably one of my biggest hurdles as a father. It's, even to this day, there are times when I can't compare. When I was, Brandon's 25 and he's still kind of trying to figure out what he's doing. He's doing some really great work. He's incredibly talented. He's maybe, we can all agree, he's like one of the best singers in the world. Mm-hmm. You're a great singer. Jesse's a great singer.
By 25, you were?
A millionaire.
On top of the charts. Multi-millionaire. It's weird, right?
And it wasn't just luck. It was like I was really successful at 25 because I was so focused and I just didn't do stupid shit.
Right.
I was completely focused on succeeding. And
I mean, that's the opposite end of the spectrum, though.
Yeah.
That's almost a little OCD Rain Man.
And I know
of that focus.
Intellectually.
You know what I mean? It must be hard to have that as a father.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Intellectually, I know that it's not fair for me to make any comparison. But then there's a part of me that also just goes, well, when I was 20, I do that. When I was 25, I owned a house.
I say that to my 2.5-year-old. I'm like, just think about what you're doing. Don't act stupid. What is wrong with you? You climbed on that before you fell off.
Are you
not getting
How
it?
Many
what
times?
Are you not getting? My wife's like, what is wrong with you? What is she doing?
She's a dumbass.
She's 2.5.
Yeah. All three of them finally did come to a point where they would have to say to me, I'm not you. You can't, I'm me. I'm going to do my thing my way.
Do you remember when they were little kids and you were out and about? Mm-hmm. Was there just abject terror and fear of something happening? Like, I can't get over the fact that I'm afraid for them all the time.
Yeah, I think that's normal. But I've always
you were focused on your music.
Yeah, I didn't care.
You were that guy.
I'll let somebody else deal with that shit. I got to write a bridge to this song. There was a little less of that, you know what, Jamie, because they did live in a bubble. Mm-hmm. My ex-wife and I engineered, whether it was conscious or unconscious, the fact that we left LA, not that people don't raise kids successfully, happily here.
They don't.
Well, yeah, pretty much they don't.
We think about leaving with the kids.
But they were raised in what my ex-wife calls Mayberry. Mm-hmm. It was so idyllic and nothing bad happens 7, there.
7,000 people in the town.
Yeah, 7,000 people.
Right outside Chicago.
Right on Lake Michigan.
Did you guys go to private schools?
We went to a public school, but it was the most private public school
exactly
that you could possibly imagine. Lake Forest.
Yeah. I call it Stepford.
Is it
it's very Stepford.
Did you fit in there or were you kind of the out? You were the outs. They were like, Stepford. Who's the rock star?
Yeah. I remember you guys shitting on Lake Forest and my boys.
We shit on Naperville. I think we shit on a lot. And Lake Forest. They were words to me. I barely remember.
Oh, yeah. Lake Forest is this sort of really snooty, But we didn't, yeah, we didn't really fit into that. We never
were an actress and a rock star.
Yeah.
Raising three boys.
Yeah.
Were you guys all a clan of the Marx boys, the Marx brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Were people that you messed with one, you messed with them all?
Yeah. It was more so, Brandon was very protective of both me and Jesse, as well as being just a total dick as a kid.
Yeah, he was Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, he was. but it was mostly him that was.
The oldest was he trouble, the oldest one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be the first to tell you.
Did you bail him out of jail a couple times?
No jail, but just stupid shit, just typical stupid shit. And he, you know, he looks back on it now and just a couple times, actually, it's really sweet. A couple times in the last year, even at 25, he's like, he'll you know, I was just thinking about, remember that time when I was 17 and blah, 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 blah. And I go, yeah. And he go, I'm so sorry. I was such an asshole.
I said that to my father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He gets it. But they've all, the other thing that they've all done independently of each other, which is the greatest for me, is they've said, okay, so I'm just going to say this one time and I'm never going to say it again, but you were right.
Yeah.
Whether it was something where I, you know, remember that thing where you and I argued and I told you to go fuck yourself, Dad? Well, you turned out to be right.
Do you remember that time with us? I moved out of the house when I was 18 years old. I didn't go to college.
Sushi.
Yeah.
Wait, he wanted you to go to college?
I don't know. Did you want me to go to college?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I guess you did.
Of course.
I'd done some acting stuff in Chicago enough that I felt like if I went to LA that, you know, I was under the impression that I'd get here and it'd be like,
here we go.
So, yeah.
Rock star.
I'm hit the ground running.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Welcome to town, my son. That's really funny.
So I'd been here for, I guess, a year at that point, and I was just so down on myself and everything because nothing was happening the way I wanted it to. He came into town and we went out to sushi, and I remember thinking back on that year that I'd spent just completely failing and how much I learned. And it was the first probably fully adult conversation that we'd ever had. And I looked at him across the table and we were talking about something serious. And I said, you know, everything they used to tell me when I was a kid, all the advice they used to give. Yeah, you were right.
And so I said, hey, hang on one second. Excuse me, man.
Yeah.
That came
this
over.
Is true.
Said,
this
can
is
you
true.
Come over here for a second? I said, would you say that again in front of me?
Yeah.
Well, what's funny is you think acting like, oh, I'll just stumble in. But the truth is it's the work ethic that your dad put in that.
Yeah.
Made him, I mean, how many songs did you write before you sold one?
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands of songs, right?
Yeah.
Acting, sometimes we think, like, I just get in front of the camera and it's right. Really. All right, listen. All right, I close the show with questions, same questions to everybody. And obviously, Luke's here, so he would find out. But what's one thing you hope your kids never find out about you or you are glad they never found out about you? And besides the blowing hookers.
I'll answer the question this way. There have been times where I went against my integrity that I regret, that I wouldn't share with anybody if I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that I, you know, in my history where I go, I hate that I did that. I wouldn't volunteer that necessarily. And if they did find out, I don't know that there's anything that they'd be like, what? But there might be things like where they'd be like, really? Wow.
Mm. Like what?
I know. Now I'm so intrigued. Well, you should have known better.
Ooh.
See, he's got so many songs.
It
don't mean nothing. Zing. I zinged you. Integrity. Like, you mean like in business dealings or in?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There have been a couple. Not.
You didn't Kenny Rogers somebody.
No.
Hey, I think this word should be that.
No, but when it comes to business, there have been times when I escaped failure by the skin of my teeth because I didn't have my shit together, because I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
And I'm so adamant about being, you know, my thing is, you know, success is when opportunity and preparation collide. And I say things to them like, you know, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. I say all those things.
Did he do that growing up where you're like, Dad, I got it.
Yep.
There's a cat hanging from a tree in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Just hang in there, baby.
Yeah.
But there have been
did you get those from your father?
Yeah, my dad was all about.
Well, he wrote jingles, so he was
such a pro, and the one thing that I never wanted to do was disappoint my father in terms of my professionalism.
Or, so why are these kids disappointing you with their professionalism?
Because they're a different generation.
It's a different generation.
they're a different generation. And they look at me like, I'm not you.
Well, you looked at your father and said, I'm going to be you.
Yeah.
What's one trait that you hope your kids get from you or your wife? Your ex-wife. Not your new wife. Other traits from your
what's
new
one,
wife.
Yeah, what's one trait that you would like Daisy to impart on? Yeah.
Business acumen.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah. Well, you know what?
Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, she's on her shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all really, yeah, I mean, yeah, they all like her, but they all have said to me, wow, she's really impressive.
Yeah, there's a respect there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's been really, she loves them and she like gives them ideas in terms of their branding and mm-hmm, any help that she can.
It is about branding.
It's all about branding.
Really? What's your, where's your video? Do you have a YouTube channel?
Yeah, it's on YouTube at Lucas Marks Music.
At Lucas Marks Music.
YouTube.com/LucasMarksMusic.
And Brandon is, he goes by Open Water.
Open Water.
Which is, he's into EDM, electronic music. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Marks is, he's in a metal band. And he's about to do his first band record. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really great.
When is Marksapalooza going to happen? Where it's all the Marks kids for
that,
a weekend
actually,
out in Coachella.
I would love that.
What is one trait you hope your kids don't get from you? I can't, honestly, Richard.
I'm kind of awesome.
You're pretty great.
Your deep, deep narcissism.
Yeah. That served me well. I think it would serve me well, too.
Narcissism goes a long way.
Yeah. What I have learned in the last 2.5 years is how to celebrate. I never knew how to celebrate. You know, when I first started dating my wife now, one night we were just on the phone talking. I was on the road and we were talking on the phone and she said, you know, I saw something today about some of your hits and I was looking at it. She said, I meant to ask you, like, how did you celebrate when Right Here Waiting went to number one? How did you celebrate when Repeat Offender was the number one album? How did you celebrate when? And I went, what do you mean? She went, well, every time you had a number, she said, you've had 14 number one songs. How did you celebrate? I went, I didn't, I was like too busy working.
I would have died after the first number one hit. That party would have fucking destroyed the earth.
So
me too.
I would have had one number hit. I would have been like, I made it. Yeah. Let's rock. There's no number two for me.
There wasn't even a dinner.
Which is probably why most bands are, you know, a lot of bands are one hit wonders. That's one hit and then they go, done it.
So I would say to them, don't wait to celebrate.
Yeah. That's a great answer, but don't celebrate too hard.
Right.
Right. Do still a little something. Right. Yeah. Don't go crazy.
Don't go crazy.
Get another number one hit.
Yeah, don't buy the yacht.
My guest today, Mr. Richard Marks and his son, Luke. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for coming to be a part of
fun.
This. If that's not father-son time, I don't know what is. You guys rock. Thank you for joining me, and we'll see you on the next edition of Father Time.
All right, now the middle school me is just totally geeking out. Thank you to Jamie Kaler for interviewing Richard and Luke Marks for Father Time. If you liked that episode, there's a whole season of Father Time where Jamie Kaler interviews other celebrity dads, people like Jason Alexander and Joel McHale. It's all on Howl. To hear more Father Time, go to howl.fm/father, and you can use the code FATHER for 1 month of access to all the great shows on Howl, including Father Time, for free. That's howl.fm/father. And of course, now that I've shared my middle school rock star crush, I think it's only fair that you share yours. Go to longestshortesttime.com and leave your comment on this episode. That's episode 92. This podcast is produced by me, Hillary Frank, and Abigail Keel. We are edited by Peter Clowney. Our engineers are Pete Karam and the Reverend John Delore. Our theme music is by The Batteries Duo. We get editorial support from Anne-Marie Baldonado and Antonia Akitunde. We had extra help this week from Luz Fleming. Father Time is a Howl original and a production of Midroll Media. It is produced by Josh Richmond and Dana Wickens. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode. We'll have Anna Sale from Death, Sex, and Money here, and she'll be telling us all about her dad's convoluted birds and the bees talk involving strawberry shortcake.
Strawberry's parents decided they wanted to have another kid, and he explained to us how it worked. And we were young enough that, like, what I remember thinking is, like, what?
Don't miss this show, people. Subscribe to The Longest Shortest Time in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be a nice person and just rate us and write us a review. It helps other people to find our show. And as always, here at The Longest Shortest Time, we want to hear your stories. Tell us anything about your relationship with your kids or your relationship with your parents. We just want to be surprised. We especially love hearing from teenagers. Are you a teenager? Do you have teenagers? Write to us. Go to longestshortesttime.com and submit your story.
My name is Katie Couric. I love to talk, and I love to ask questions.
Have you always been a feminazi like me, Rebecca?
Yes, I was born a feminazi.
There is so much coming at us fast and furiously every day, but I don't think anybody's explaining it very well. And that's why I wanted to do this podcast.
Right now in the polls, Hillary beats Donald Trump.
I know, but polls schmolls, Esther, right, to go a little deeper than the wrestling match that you currently see on cable television.
It does make you think that what we do here is important to generations beyond us.
So listen, subscribe, and let's help each other figure out what's going on.
Stand up.
You sing Your Wolf?
Yeah.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com. Earwolf.